Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and all of us at one time or another have to face critical situations. We have to deal with variables that life dumps on us, and sometimes we feel like we are a trash can special, and you wonder, what else could be dumped on me? Well, I want you to know that today our guest is Ann Gurchick, and her book is called Saved. The cover of this book is incredibly just amazing. It shows a pickup truck that's got water all the way up to its designer line, and dogs are standing on the hood, the roof, and in the back section of the pickup that had a super-sized box. Saved is the title of her book, but it's not just about dogs. It's also about Anne and how she was able to take what could have been just devastating circumstances in her own personal life. She was able to move forward in a way that was not just empowering to her, but also to the animals that she wanted to save. Ann Gurchick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I appreciate you having me.
Well, it's a delight. And when I got your book, I was so intrigued. Of course, anytime we hear the term Hurricane Katrina, visions will pop up into just about everybody's mind that was around to witness that horrific disaster that Mother Nature decided to bring into that part of the United States. And of course, we're aware also of the, not just the devastation, but the lives of people who were just, well, everything was gone. But the animals they had to leave behind, the time when they could not, they were not permitted to assist their animals. And when it came to rescue for quite a bit of time, no way were you going to, human beings came first, animals, well, if we have a chance, we'll go back and get them. And you yourself have a real passion for animals because you've been involved with welfare for them and rescue work for a number of years. And when you had this situation occur with Katrina, you yourself were going through a tremendous battle. Tell us what that battle was.
Actually, I was battling breast cancer. I had been diagnosed about 11 months before and had very quickly gone in and had to have bilateral mastectomy and reconstructive surgery, then chemotherapy, and then radiation, and my radiation had just, I just finished my radiation a couple months before Katrina struck. I mean, I was still bald and, weak, but not terribly weak, but not feeling 100%.
Well, with that, though, when this situation with Katrina came about, you decided you were going to pick up and move forward. Anyone that has ever gone through the battle with cancer and the treatments therein, it's a very, very emotional period.
Absolutely.
Very emotional period. But Hannah, this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful friend of yours.
Yes.
She also had cancer.
She did. She did. Hannah was my sweet little 7-year-old Rottweiler. And just a very, very lovable dog. And she had had a bout with cancer, and the oncologist in, I was living in Texas at the time, and the oncologist had said they had gotten all of it and she was fine. It was stage one. And literally the day before I was supposed to leave to move to Colorado, I had, was following my dream. I had sold my business. Life was good. I was following my dream. I was moving to the mountains. And they tell me that her cancer's back and it's really bad and she doesn't have long to live. And I am just beside myself. I mean, but I have to go because all my furniture's already gone. So Colorado has one of the best canine cancer hospitals in the country at CSU, a teaching hospital. And my vet oncologist said, get her there. Just since you're going there, just take her there. So I'm traveling on the road, and they call. Well, actually, when I went home that day, I had called my sister, and my sister called me, and I was just in tears saying, oh, Hannah's cancer's back. And I wasn't even thinking, and you say silly things sometimes, and I said, I wish it was me instead of her, and my sister chastised me for that, and don't you ever say that again. So the next day, we're heading out of Texas for Colorado, and the vet calls and says, I don't know what's going on, but her test came back negative. We gave her chemotherapy the day before. They came back negative. Nothing wrong. She doesn't have cancer. I don't know what's going on here. And lo and behold, 4 months later, I was diagnosed. So be careful mm-hmm. with what you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, it's a very powerful bond between owner and animals many times. And it has been my observation that many times animals will reflect something that is actually upcoming with an owner, just like Hannah did with you. And I've seen this happen so many times, and it's just a fascinating correlation. Well, here you are. You're moving. Hannah, you're able to take her with you.
Right.
But she ends up with a serious lung infection.
Right.
And your life, I mean, you went through quite an intense cycle there. When did the situation with Katrina, when did you see that? When and where were you when you saw what was going on there?
Well, I was living in Aspen, Colorado, where I live now. And as I said earlier, I had just completed my cancer treatments and still bald. Late August, September, I'm watching TV, and I just keep seeing all these horrible, the horrible reports coming out of New Orleans, and first the fear of the hurricane, and then they make it through that, and then, of course, the levees break, and they're flooded, and there were pictures of pets and people on the rooftop, and they take the people, and they'd be in hysterics having to leave their pet, and I was just devastated myself. It really touched me, and I without even thinking, I was like, I want to do something. I want to be there. And it was more a desire than a determination at that time. You know how we all see things on TV and we want to help. And that's mm-hmm. what it was initially. And then one step led to another. I called a friend of mine who runs one of the animal rescue organizations in the United States. And he was like, we need help there bad. If you can find people, come down. And before I even realized it, the plans were in motion for me to actually go there and help these animals, and I couldn't have been happier. I really couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went along with some other people, and you had to get a private plane to go down.
We did.
And I found it fascinating how one link connected you with other individuals, and it actually happened, but you were really limited in what you could take.
Absolutely. It was small private plane, and I had no clue. I didn't at that time know airplanes, and I heard Cessna, and I had no clue what it was. I was thinking it was a big plane, and we were limited to, we could each bring a certain amount of, like, I think it was 12 pounds. I can't remember exactly right now, but just a very limited number of pounds of luggage.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 20. I think it was 20 pounds that you could take.
Yeah, it was 20 pounds. Anyway, they limited all four of us, and so, I was literally weighing things and just being so careful because I had sort of a fear of flying, and I didn't want anything to go wrong, so I was doing everything I was told to do. And, when we got to the, we were flown from Aspen to Santa Fe to meet the owner of the plane because she wanted to go with us, and when she arrived, she just starts pulling all these dog crates and bags of food and luggage and everything out of her car, and I'm just breaking out in a sweat thinking, oh, my God, that's way over 20 pounds. It was quite the experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you all managed to make it, but I loved this story about the Lady Catherine. She's dressed head to toe in hot pink, spike heels, dress, her. She's got big hot pink hoop earrings.
Yep.
Sunglasses. She looks like something out of a psych. I mean, just a description of you. She looks like a psychedelic pink nightmare.
Exactly, with big blonde hair.
Something
big blonde hair
that maybe came out of the show Hair.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I we're waiting on the tarmac and waiting, and all of a sudden a sedan comes across, and, you know, it opens, and the door opens, and she pops out, and I'm just, you know, you're just sort of stunned. And she was so nice. I mean, she was so sweet and lending the plane and flying us down there, but I just don't think she realized what she was getting in for. I mean, high heels and a little sundress, and we're like, this is not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately. But you know, we're forever grateful to her. It was quite the funny experience, as I detail in the book, how, you know, the flight went, and then how we eventually had to part ways with her. It was definitely funny.
Well, yes, it is funny. But yeah. She was not able to go because she had an injury herself. But she really wasn't in any way, shape, or form prepared to take on what was going to be coming about. And when you end up going there, it reminded me of descriptions in Haiti, mm-hmm. where you have just total disorganization. You talk about how there was this heavy, foul-smelling odor, and the humidity was very oppressive, which is typical for that part of the country. And it just was like walking from one environment where there was harmony, and you walk into total discord.
Right. And you just have to go with it. Exactly. I mean, I feel very blessed to live where I live, which is why I, you know, followed my dream to live here. You know, the mountains are pristine and everything. The air is great and everything's great. And then, you know, you get out of the car there, and literally I was just hit with the oil refineries and the thick humidity, and it's just a completely different world, not to mention the devastation of what everyone had just been through. I mean, these people that we would run into, like at the hotel that were hanging outside on the balcony when we pulled up, they had these blank stares. They had been through hell, and my heart went out to them, and I couldn't imagine myself having to go through that, but being where we are, or being where we were at that time, you just dealt with it. You just, you know, you helped as much as you could, and you did what you could, and you didn't even think about yourself.
Now, you were fortunate that you had a friend. Her name is Bland.
Right.
And you hadn't been there very long, and you really got sick.
I did.
And she told you that you had gotten a touch of food poisoning.
I did. I didn't know the first night that we were in Louisiana. We hadn't quite made it to the Lamar Dixon, which is the facility where they had set up like the animal triage. We had gone out to dinner, and in the middle of the night, I got extremely ill, and I didn't know. You know, when you've been through cancer, it's always in the back of your mind. You don't know what a reoccurrence is like if you haven't been there. So, you know, all of a sudden, I'm fine one minute, and then I was deathly ill, and I was very scared, not knowing what was happening with my body. But she woke up in the middle of the night, and she was like, "No, you have food poisoning." So I literally was so sick. Insisted we had rented two cars, but I insisted that they go and leave me in the hotel because I didn't want them to miss out on working. So they begrudgingly set off in the car, just the three of them, and they left me at the hotel, and I, you know, slept it off, and I, you know, by early afternoon or, you know, around noon, I was able to get up and get in the car and head out to the facility, which was probably, I think it was like, God, 2 or 3 hours away
mm-hmm.
from where we were.
And that was the thing. You had to commute on a daily basis,
right.
Quite a long distance, and one of the vivid pictures that you paint with your words is how when you came to this area where rescued animals had been kenneled,
mm-hmm.
that it took you a while to really become aware of what was happening with these poor animals. And there was total disorganization. The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing. And these animals that had been rescued, they were in misery because they were not getting water. They were sitting in their own urine and feces inside these kennels. I mean, these types of circumstances, unless someone ever has been involved in a disaster, it's just absolutely nightmarish, because you really didn't have very much in the way of instruction, because there wasn't the organization that you had thought there might be of people accustomed to dealing with disasters and animals and how to get them fresh water and get them the medical treatment and all of this. That was quite, I mean, your verbal description is just incredible.
Well, thank you. I admire animal welfare agencies, but I think everyone was just so overwhelmed with the number of animals coming in. I mean, my experience with some of the larger organizations that I support, they have funds set aside for these emergencies, and they have these plan of action, but I think that they were so overwhelmed that they'd never been through anything like Katrina before. And literally, we were working in there. The Lamar Dixon Center is basically a large equestrian center, and so it's got, like six barns, and in each barn there's probably 100 stalls. And in each of those stalls, there were anywhere between, just anywhere between 8 and 20 dogs in kennels that, when we first started cleaning, we picked a stall. I mean, there was nobody saying, do this, do that. They've already been taken care of. They were just like, go clean the animal, help with the animals. And so you literally sort of found your way, and you just picked the stall, and you worked in teams. One person would take the dog out and take it for a walk, and the other person, while the dog was being walked, would take out these disgusting trays of, as you said, urine and feces and vomit and just, it was horrible. But you would take the tray out, you'd clean it, you'd wash it, you'd try and find a bowl, you'd get the water and the food, make a clean kennel, and bring the dog back in from the walk, and then go on to the next one. But the problem was there was nowhere that anybody could write, this dog ate at this time, or this dog. Mm-hmm. So for a while there, the same kennels were getting cleaned while, unbeknownst to anybody, there's dogs that were sitting, possibly most of the day, and weren't getting any attention at all, and they weren't getting walked, and their water bowls were, dirty or dry. And, again, I think it was just because the agencies were overwhelmed. And there were other, this was the Lamar Dixon Center where we were, and there were other organizations that had set up a couple other large triage centers, but this was the biggest one. This is the one that had the animals literally on one end of the facility. They were literally coming in off the streets of New Orleans in horrible shape. And at the other end of the facility, they were getting shipped out to any rescue that would take them. And at that time, Pet Finders hadn't even set up. Pet Finders mm-hmm. eventually came in and set up, but it was very chaotic and very sad for the animals.
You talk about an acronym that you all developed. It's called FBS, Fecal Backsplash. I mean, you were working in this stuff, and you just had to be prepared that you weren't going to come out smelling sweet and wonderful. It was just the opposite. You were going to really deal with just this horrific mess, and I can imagine some people listening would say, oh, my goodness, the sanitation, how could they handle it? Well, you just did the best you could.
Yeah, you don't think about it. You really didn't. And the first day, it's your first day and you don't know what to expect. And so you dress nice because you're going to, again, you don't know what to expect. Am I going to go into orientation? What do I have to do? And you get there and you immediately start cleaning these dog kennels. And the first time you go up to clean these trays that I had described earlier, there's hoses and you with the spray handles on them, and you put the spray nozzle on and you go to clean the tray, and it just all shoots right back at you. And the first time it did it to me, it literally got me from head to toe. And mm-hmm. I was, just disgusted, but it's like, what do you do? You just mm-hmm. go on and keep doing it. You don't even think about it after a while. But yeah, FBS, fecal backsplash.
Right. You encountered a wonderful woman by the name of Liz. And she invited you and your associates to stay at her place.
Yes.
And it made it a little bit easier to get into the facility that you were working at, didn't it?
Well, it did, because when we arranged the plane, and then I just thought I was going to call New Orleans or outside New Orleans and find a hotel. Well, that wasn't the case, as you well know, after a catastrophe of that size, there's no hotels, there's nowhere to stay. And after hours of calling people, we were connected with Liz, and I didn't realize at the time, but her house, she offered her lake house. I mean, she doesn't know us from Adam, but what she had said is, if you guys are coming that far to take care of animals, you've got to be good people. Mm-hmm. So she agreed to let us stay at her house, and it ended up that it was over an hour from where we were working, so, you know, every morning and every evening, we'd be driving back and forth for at least an hour. Or more, but she was amazing. I mean, she would drive out there every night and stay with us, and then in the morning she'd fix us coffee and everything and send us on our way, but just the sweetest person ever.
There was an individual that ended up being forced to leave who was supposed to be overseeing things, and she was one of those, the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing.
Right.
And all of you volunteers, there were hundreds of you.
Right.
And you all went in at your own cost. You all provided your own transportation. You were putting up with so much that is just traumatizing when you think of it. And that was something that all of you had to do, was to develop something of a detached positioning. We're going to do the best we can. But this particular woman, she ended up really being overrun almost by all the volunteers. They had had it. They said, look, we've got to do more for these animals. We've got to have some kind of a plan, some kind of a system. And I was really intrigued by what you had to say about, not only did she finally leave, things started to get a little bit better organized, but one of the things that you encountered were pit bulls.
Right.
And pit bulls are very controversial animals. We've just had a situation that happened here in the Seattle area, and people want to vilify these dogs, but in Louisiana, they are used in dogfights.
Right.
And when you found out about the amount of dogs that were purposefully raised to be in these dogfights, it really was hideous. In fact, I had it in my book. I just wrote, this is awful stuff.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking because not only, dog fighting is very, very big in Louisiana, and I wasn't aware of that. And the majority of the animals, of the dogs that were coming in, were pit bulls, and there would be these really big pit bulls, and none of them were neutered. But there'd be big pit bulls, and they'd have scars all over them, and then you'd put two pit bulls, you know, in kennels, they bring in two and put them next to each other in the stall, and they'd go nuts, like fence fighting, really viciously fence fighting. And we were like, what the hell? And then, what the heck? And then there would be puppies that were smaller pit bulls that would just be trembling, just constantly trembling. And what we realized is that, you know, that dog fighting is such a issue there that they have the fighters, the pit bulls that are fighters, but then they also have these smaller dogs. It's heartbreaking, but they use puppies for bait. Like, they will throw them a puppy in with these two fighters, and the two dogs will fight each other. And just, you know, I can't. It's upsetting to me to even talk about it, but it happens, or it happened all the time in Louisiana, and probably still does. But we were there one night, and there were people casing, before the security came in, they were casing the kennels late at night, and sure enough, the next morning, puppies had disappeared, had been stolen from the facility. And it just, you know, I know that there's a couple large organizations that are really trying to get into the underbelly and stop it, but it's a big problem there.
You met a Rottweiler.
Oh.
His name was Rocky.
Yes.
And all of you determined you weren't going to get attached to any of these dogs. But Rocky was different. Why?
You know, as you probably understand from my earlier conversation, I love Rottweilers, and they, like pit bulls, have bad reputations because it's who brings them up and how you bring them up. Most Rottweilers are very, very sweet. And he, you know, I wasn't going to get connected, but I don't know what happened. You just look into a dog's eyes, and he was a beautiful Rottweiler. We just bonded immediately. I took him out. I walked him. I just connected to this dog and was thrilled and loved him. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, don't get attached. But within seconds of seeing him, I was attached because he was my favorite breed. He had a great disposition. He was really excited. He bonded with me immediately. So I sort of got attached.
Yes, you did. Now, you talk in your book about how the National Guard came in.
Yes.
And how they took up positioning so that the animals were protected. You talk about pet finders and how when the team finally was able to get in, that they really were very well organized and really started pulling things together. And other groups started pulling together. A disaster like this is almost beyond comprehension.
Right.
Because I don't know how anybody could ever be prepared. And when you think of the thousands and thousands of animals that probably didn't make it, and the thousands that did, some of them were eventually reunited with owners. Many of them would never be reunited with their owners because their owners didn't know where to find them.
Right.
So you have this, and it is a phenomenal living experience that you are going through. But you and Bland end up with a batch of animals, and you just decide you're going to drive them to Colorado, right?
Well, I didn't really decide. I sort of had to.
What happened was
our shelter director, Seth Saxon, told us we could bring like 9 dogs back, so of course we bring 18. And the plane, again, was a smaller plane. These dogs they were all in their own crates, so not all 18 dogs would fit on the, and 4 people and the pilot would fit on the plane to fly back to Aspen, so some of them had to be driven, and they call me the road warrior because anytime there's a rescue, I love road trips, and I'll drive anywhere, so of course I volunteered to drive them back. And then one of the other girls, because there was 4 of us, one of the other 3 had to, you know, accompany me because only we were going to do 2 and 2. 2 people would drive, 2 people would fly. And my friend Melinda, who's also on the board of the animal shelter, got the short straw. And she does not like road trips at all. But she, mm-hmm. I mean, she was great. She agreed to do it. And so we ended up having to drive 9 of the dogs back.
Well, you have one segment that you write about with Melinda, because this was really a learning curve for all of you. And she had fallen in love with a little dog, Cujo. And the event that just blew me away, because it wasn't that big a dog.
No, little Pomeranian.
Yeah, just a little dog.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't like Cujo. You said the dog was so mean you could fend off a pit bull if it was put up against one. I mean, this dog had an attitude.
He did, and he was a nipper and a little biter, and he just was very nippy and very, very aggressive for a Pomeranian. I'd never seen one like that.
But she had tied him to the window, and he ended up doing a little Cirque du Soleil special with windshield wipers when they were going. I mean, you describe this stuff, and I'm thinking, this would make a good television show if you could get a dog Pomeranian to volunteer for that particular part of the episode.
I know. It was sort of horrifying for just a couple seconds, but then what happened was we were having to consolidate 2 SUVs into this one van that was supposed to be a cargo van. It ends up being a minivan, so we have to take all the dogs out of their kennels and put them all, just throw 9 dogs together in the car and hope that they're going to get together. But this little one, Cujo, was so ferocious that he would have created chaos. He would have fought with any of the other dogs, so Melinda literally was walking with him everywhere, with him on a leash, trying to load the cars. And so I turn around at one point just to put something in the back of the van, and I open the back of the van, and Melinda's like, "Ann!" And I'm, you know, we're hot and sweaty. I'm like, "What?" And I turn around, and she had tied him to the back windshield wiper of the van. And when I opened the van door, it was one of those that lift up in the air, and he, lo and behold, flew up with it and just started twirling on his leash, connected to the windshield wiper on the back of the van. And we were both like running like, get him. And we got him down, and he was fine. He was totally fine. But once we realized he was okay, we couldn't stop laughing.
Well, it's an incredible book. And there's so many more stories that are in it. Ann Gerchick has been my guest. Ann, do you have a website where people can find out about your animal rescue work and various points of information?
I do. It's saveddogs.com.
Saveddogs.com.
Correct.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think your Rottweilers are absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
And you've got Max, Strider, Hattie, and Bella.
Right.
And I think that your story is just incredible, and it is so good that you wrote it because it makes one aware of how many people it takes to be able to take a tragic situation and turn it around into something that is really quite a special experience. Ann Gerchick, I want to thank you for being my guest. The book is Saved. It's about her, her cancer battle, Katrina Dogs, that I think you will find absolutely amazing to read about. Thank you again for being my guest. Go to her website, saveddogs.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. If you would like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do exactly that. It feels so good being back in the Pacific Northwest. I enjoyed my short stint in the Great Apple. It was a marvelous experience, but my goodness, it's a full day traveling and a full day each way when you go, at least from the West Coast to the East Coast. But met some wonderful, wonderful people, and a number of them. You're going to be hearing about them in the coming months with their wonderful publications. And my thanks to the Nashville Publicity Summit. Their staff was just absolutely marvelous. They did a fabulous, fabulous job, and it's always a delight to interact with them. Okay, give me a buzz if you want to chat today, 888-627-6008. Well, I'm going to be putting on the wings. Again, I'm flying to Alaska. And for those of you who are listening from Alaska, I will be in Fairbanks and Anchorage. And you can go to my website and you can check out the dates or locales. And if you'd like to meet with me, give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. Well, by the way, I came across a recipe. If you're like me, you sort of have to stay away from carbs because you end up looking like, you know, those supersized chocolate chip cookies or whatever your favorite might be. So you have to monitor it and keep your carbs a little bit less. Well, I came across something that I thought, this is almost too good to be true, and it is too good to be true. It's called a pizza pasta pie. So I'm going to share the recipe with you because if you're like me, every once in a while you get that craving. Mm-hmm. So anyway, get yourself a pad of paper and a pen, and I will be sharing that with you. I wanted to give some tips. If you're going through a lot of stress, and who doesn't, one time or another? Well, I know for me, many times to handle stress, it's getting out with my little Scotty Victor and maybe walking 5 miles or doing something physical that allows you to sort of turn the brain off and get yourself reoriented so you can conquer that stressful stress and put it into a more positive context. Well, I just thought it was interesting when I came across some information about Google. That's right, Google. You see them every day on the internet there. Well, apparently, they have certain philosophies, the staff that work for Google. They say you need to have whiteboards around. Now, I don't know how many of us want to plaster our walls with whiteboards, but apparently in the Google offices, they think people need to write down whatever ideas they have. They really believe in what they call brilliant basics of brainstorming. And so they say if you make it easy to write down on-the-go ideas, and at Google you can even write on the windows. How many kids would like that? Not many moms would, but kids would love it. Well, that is what they do. So you could probably do the same thing if you had an idea journal. If you had something you could carry with you, put it in your pocket. Guys have pockets always that are handy. We gals usually have to put stuff in our purses. But if you have something you can write on, when an idea pops into your head, it works. Steve Allen, who was just an absolutely brilliant, brilliant man, developed early on in his career having pads of paper all throughout his home. So if he got an idea, he'd write it down, and he put the date down on it. And then he would, I don't know who collected them for him, but he always was coming up with ideas. But that was a habit he developed. He always recorded the ideas because he never knew which one was going to work. And this guy's brain was just working on overtime all the time. Also, if you want to deal with stress, sometimes working a puzzle can help you shift your thinking patterns. And at Google, they have batches of Legos they put out for people. They say it enables people to de-stress. If they're working with a challenge, if they play with the Legos, talk about retreating into childhood, what a wonderful thing to do. You've got the colors with the Legos, you know, they come in brilliant colors, but it shifts the mind. It puts you into a different space mentally. Now, maybe you can't play with Legos at work, but maybe you could use something like a stress ball. What do you think about that? Have something that you can squeeze and work with that. Not only will it keep the lower arm muscles good and strong and your hands nice and strong, but it is terrific. And we gals, what else can we do? Well, how about knitting? Something like this, it's amazing. And I used to do that years ago until I made the mistake of trying to build an afghan that would fit a king-size bed. That got to be a little bit heavy for me to lug around. But it's wonderful. It keeps the hands busy. So any kind of activity like that is going to help you pull yourself in. And then you should have something that really is enjoyable to you. Maybe it's reading a murder mystery or something. But I find that the items that Google puts in its environment, it's fascinating. They have these huge, huge bean chairs, bean bags. That's what I should call them, but they call them chairs. And they just, you get in them and you have to wiggle around and it allows, they have them set up so people can sit and talk with each other, but it's color, it is comfort, and there's just working with lighting. They have implemented all of these various things in their environment. And one of the things I know in feng shui that often is recommended is having a water fountain. And it doesn't have to be a big, elaborate something. It can be a very small-sized water fountain and putting it in a certain place so that the soothing sounds of water can relax you. And then, of course, and having interviewed a doodle queen years ago, doodling is a big, big thing for a lot of people. And they encourage at Google that you go ahead and you do your doodling and you make sure that you just use color if you want, but don't be afraid to, again, move the hands, move the motion, the physical motion of activity, shifting from that stress-involved part of self into something that's what I call the no-brain motion and section. I think it's why we women are notoriously of the mindset. If something hits, we go scrub the floor. I had a friend who was a top executive at a leading whiskey company. And some people might say, yeah, all she had to do is get a couple of shots of that and she'd be loose as a goose. Well, that wasn't the case. Irene would get so stressed. Her schedule was so intense. She had all kinds of meetings. And she said, Donna, you know how I handle stress? I said, no. She said, I scrub floors in her apartment. And actually, she had a condo, but that's like an apartment. Anyway, she would scrub the floors. Now, I want you to know, she didn't have a huge floor to scrub. But she'd get down, and she'd just scrub. And she said, all of a sudden, the stress would be released. Well, that's what Irene did. I don't know what you'd like to do, but I think you could figure something out. You don't have to spend money. You don't have to do anything but get into that shift so that you take back your positioning of concentration. You get your emotions where you want them to be so you can be a clear receiver for whatever you should know what you should be able to do easily and readily. But when you have stressful situations that hit and they come in all sizes, shapes, and colors, that kind of a shifting of the mind allows you then to deal with whatever has to be dealt with. It's a fascinating phenomena. So those are just a few tips for you. Okay, are you ready for some pizza pasta pie? Good stuff. I mean, after all, we want to be able to indulge once in a while, but wouldn't it be nice if we could do it so that we wouldn't be packing on the calories? Well, this is how easy it is, and this serves about 6 people, but it satisfies, I think, a craving sometimes that we get. Many times when people are under stress, they go for the carbs. Why? Because it creates a shift. It's like a serious shot of sugar, and it goes into the brain. It creates serotonin. It just does all kinds of wonderful things. It's very comforting. It's very relaxing to the body system. So here's the recipe. Now, you're going to have 3 different types of cheeses. You're going to have a marinara sauce, some mushrooms, and some beef, and this is what we've got here. You need about 6 ounces of dry spaghetti. You're going to need an egg, and that should be lightly beaten at room temperature. You're going to need 1/4 cup plus 2 tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese. You're going to need 1/2 pound of lean ground beef, 2 cups of sliced mushrooms, and if you're not a mushroom person, you don't have to include this if you don't want to. 1 1/2 cups of marinara sauce. You can make your own or you can buy whatever's ready-made. 1/2 teaspoon of dried oregano. You're going to need 1 cup part skim ricotta cheese, and then 3/4 cup of shredded part skim mozzarella cheese. Now, your oven, preheat it to 350 degrees. You're going to need a 9-inch pie pan, and I'd recommend a deep dish one. And you want to coat that with cooking spray. Now, your spaghetti, just go ahead and cook it according to the directions on your box or your package. You're going to drain and rinse your pasta after it's cooked, and you want to make sure that you remove as much of the water as possible. And if you rinse it in cold water, it is really going to be able to drain very efficiently and well. You take that cooked spaghetti, put it in a large bowl, take the beaten egg and 1/4 cup of the Parmesan cheese, mix it all together. You put the spaghetti on the bottom and up the side of your 9-inch pie pan, and you just put it to the side. Now, you need a medium nonstick skillet. You spray that with some cooking spray. Put it over medium-high heat. Add your beef and your mushrooms together. And if you're not using mushrooms, obviously, they're not going to be in this step. And you cook it to the combination for 5 to 7 minutes until the beef is nicely browned. If you find that your meat has more fat in the pan than what you like, just have some paper towels handy. Put the meat in the paper towels with the excess fat there. Come out, and then just toss it right back into the hot pan. You're going to put your marinara sauce and oregano in with your cooked meat. Stir to combine. Let it cook for about 3 to 4 minutes. Your ricotta, you want to stir it up quickly, and you want to then layer it onto your spaghetti crust. You want to spread it evenly. Then you take your meat sauce, which is nice and warm, and you put it right on top of the ricotta layer. You sprinkle it with mozzarella and the remaining cheese, and if you're like me, you always add extra. Pop it in that 350-degree oven for about 30 minutes till it's heated through, and then you take it out. Now, if your mozzarella, your cheese, and your parmesan have not browned the way you like, put it under the broiler. Watch it carefully because you don't want it to burn. Put it under the broiler until it gets a delicious golden brown. And let it stand for about 10 minutes before you serve it. You know, this would be great for a potluck, for a picnic, anything like this, because this will travel beautifully if you wanted to fix this for a gathering. So double it, triple it. The recipe is a winner, and you can add more seasonings to it. I'd recommend a little bit of powdered or finely ground fennel seed in with a marinara sauce. Maybe you wanted to add a little bit of onion. You could do that, too. Don't be afraid to experiment with these recipes, but this is a good basic one, and kids will love it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. When we come back, more good things to share. And don't forget, if you want to chat, you can give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. By the way, I want to let you know who is coming on the show this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how you can master your self-image. Now, Daryl Knock is going to be my guest. This is a very, very interesting man, and he has something that he has implemented that is making a difference with young people throughout the country, and it's called the Gratitude Coin. So we're going to be hearing about that, some other things. And for those of you up in Alaska, because I'm traveling up to Alaska, I will be there and on the second day of May, we will be showing the best of Donna on the program. We'll be replaying China Skies, which was on Friday. So you'll be hearing that, but then I'll be back with you live on Thursday. We're going to be talking about quantum map thinking. Now, this is James Mapes, and he has just got some absolutely wonderful, wonderful perspectives that you're going to enjoy. And then on Friday, we are going to be talking about soul shift. Mark Ireland is going to be with me, and we're going to be talking about his dad, who was a world-renowned psychic medium. This man was incredible. And Mark is going to be sharing a lot of his own personal experiences and the association with his dad. So we've got a real good lineup this week. And the information is all going to be posted about my upcoming guests on BBS Radio. Under show information, it will be there by tomorrow. And also my newsletter is going to be going out. So just know all you have to do if you want to get the free newsletter every month, just send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and we'll make sure that you get a copy along with a few thousand other people. It's just a delight to be able to communicate that way with you, and you'll also have the information about the guests and all kinds of good things to share. Dubious beauty treatments. When I came across this information, I thought, okay, this is very interesting trivia. When it comes to beauty, men and women both are vain. And throughout the centuries, there have always been various applications. But I thought It would be fun to share with you a little bit of historical stuff as well as what's going on today. Now, ancient Egyptians used kohl, and that was pronounced, that's spelled K-O-H-L, to line the eyes. And of course, we all are familiar with those exotic Egyptian women that have these deep, dark lines around their eyes. Well, one of the reasons that was used was to protect them from the rays of the sun so that they wouldn't get burned so badly because it deflected in their mind's eyes. And the thing was that when they made this kohl powder to decorate the eyes, it was made from lead powder and copper ore. Makes you wonder how much of that actually got into their system. But that was very important. And, of course, we all know about cultures that have used large lip piercings to signify their class or status. And depending on the tribe and the part of the world you saw this in, they could be as big as dinner plates. I mean, it's just amazing. Now, today, interestingly enough, you'll see a lot of young people with what looks to be like sticks through their ears or these cylinders that they put in their earlobes, and they keep expanding the size of the cylinder that they put in until they have holes as big around as your pinky finger, if not larger. So that's something that's carried over, and a lot of the young people today are doing that. And they say it's sort of a status symbol. It marks their generation, you might say. But in today's world, Botox, and they will use this toxin. Yes, it is a poison. They will paralyze the muscles in the face so that you don't have any wrinkles. Thank you, I think I'll pass. But beer baths, wow, have they been around for a long time. Milk baths, beer baths, goes back a long way. It's supposed to relax muscles. Well, maybe if you drink it. But anyway, and it's supposed to help the skin. But I thought that this one point of information, I have never heard of this. Have you ever heard of a goldfish pedicure? Well, let me tell you. People are having that done, let's say on a daily basis, in Japan. It was developed by them, and it's available worldwide. And what do you do? Well, I guess you stick your feet in a goldfish bowl, and those little fish go and nibble at all that dead skin. I don't know if it tickles or not. I really am not particularly interested. But that's one of the latest beauty secrets. But I'll share with you some of the others that women used. I'm telling you what we gals do just to think it's going to make us look better. Well, this one should really make your day. It's a nightingale dung facial. Mm-hmm. Again, the Japanese have used it. It's been going on for thousands of years. And they use it to bleach and brighten the skin. I didn't know there were that many nightingales around that could contribute to this. And they have to be caged because that's the only way you're going to get the stuff. Also, at one time in the Renaissance period, women would put leeches on their ears to drain blood from their faces so that they would have a pale complexion. Ugh. Okay. Then, in London today, they have got a particular hair treatment. And ladies, this is just unbelievable. What is it? Bull semen. Mm-hmm. It's a hair rinse. Oh, I know. It just makes you wonder who thinks of these things and do they really work? I don't know. I have no idea. But I'll tell you what, I'm very glad for the products of today because in Elizabethan England, when women wanted to dye their hair, yes, even then, they didn't want the gray. They used dyes of lead, lye, and sulfur. Well, this last one, we in the Pacific Northwest, I can guarantee you, as much as we have these little creatures around, I would not in the least amount of time be interested. Snail slime facial. Yeah. I'm sorry. I think soap and water is going to do very nicely. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're just about out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Well, what can I say? I just got back from New York where everything goes. You're going to find anything and everything in New York. It's just a wonderful place.
And it gives rise to a lot of interesting conversation. This is Donna Sebo. Glad to be home in the Pacific Northwest. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, have an absolutely magnificent day. Join me tomorrow because we are going to show you how you can make your life healthy, happy, and even a little bit sassy if that's what you want. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. New time. Don't forget. 9 o'clock in the morning. That's right. New time slot, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. See you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.